Okay, great. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the FCCLP meeting. I'm going to jump in right away with the news. It's actually not so much news. I've been saying this now for a while, but it's important, so it bears at least quickly repeating. So, moving towards the final feasibility study report, they need the first draft of that to be ready by the end of the year. So we need a draft of version zero to be ready for internal PED review by the end of September. So therefore, we need the draft analysis notes by basically, this weekend, early September. And all of this, of course, is in aligned with the update of the European Strategy Report, which, as you know, will happen in March. I think it's March next year. And all the results basically need to be shown at the Paris workshop, the third ECFA Higgs Factories workshop in Paris, which will be October 9th through 11th. So this is the slide I've been showing from all of this is from the physics and performance conveners, by the way. This is the slide from the about the FCC notes. Basically, we need an internal FCC note if you're working on the FCC using FCC software. I let you read this offline if you want the details. So today we will hear from Sarah about HNLs and from Julia about impact parameter distributions that they were looking at in the context of their exotic Higgs analysis. Then, of course, the next major event on our radar is the Paris workshop. Please don't forget to register and pay the fee. And if you want to have a poster, the deadline for that, I believe, is still the end of September. And there's reduced fees for that. And then there's the Italy-France workshop in November and some usual links at the bottom. So that's all I wanted to remind you of. Any questions about that? Okay, I don't see anything.
Juliet, maybe I have one thing about the agenda. So I have to leave at 2 sharp. I don't know if that's true for everyone. Then the order is fine. Otherwise, I would ask to switch.
Yeah, I've got another meeting as well, so
Right. That's what I recalled. Perfect.
yep. So I will be strict. Sarah.
So, I mean, maybe just to note at this stage, I do have questions about this kind of process of FCC note and then papers, but it's slightly related to the stuff I'm about to show in my presentation. So I won't give them now, but I would like to have a discussion after that talk about how we're actually going to streamline these FCC notes to papers, how you decide for me, I think it's like how do you decide the metric for something to be enough to be classed as an FCC publication. But yeah, we can maybe come back to it after.
Okay. Yeah, indeed. Let's talk about it to the best of my Rebecca and Giacomo's ability, given what we know from the coordination side. And if need be, we will talk to those above us, about Emanuele and Michele, and get back to you. So please, I think Sarah, you're up first, right? Yeah, because you asked me first.
Can you see the slides okay? Great. So I'm going to try and present I guess, a summary of some results that I've put together in the last couple of months, but this is actually really building on work that was done by a series of master students in Cambridge. The first was Daniel Beach, and then this year it's been John Haywood. So what I tried to do was go through their reports and work and try to bring out the messages and also try to understand what was causing some of these differences in the hope that this can maybe be published going forward. So just to give some history, I think much of what we've been doing in the last few years has been building on this SNOMAS paper that was an LLP white paper that has many people in our team on the author list. which was done a few years ago, and this considered three benchmark studies, one of which was H&Ls. They also consider ALPS and exotic Higgs decays, and these were used to kind of motivate further optimization of experimental conditions and analysis techniques. So in Cambridge, for the last couple of years, we've had two students working on the H&L channel, and the aim was to take the EE new channel and try to extend the sensitivity studies using the WINT 23 samples. And what I've been doing the last month is trying to write up the conclusions, and I'm very eager to see how we could get them published. I'm not going to go through this in a lot of detail. You've all seen the standard introduction slides before. But I think what I wanted to highlight is that for these H&L studies, how long-lived the signals might be in our detector or whether they're more prompt ends up depending on the H&L mass and the coupling. So when the couplings and masses are small, you get relatively long-lived particles. And there are some equations on this slide and also in the initial snow mass report where you can basically work out the effective lifetime. In terms of what was done on the first in the first paper, they were studying H&L searches in the Z pole run, where you've got a high luminosity and then you have a Z decaying to a heavy neutral lepton and a neutrino. And essentially, here you get approximately no standard model backgrounds once you start looking for a dispersed vertex and very clean experimental conditions. And the two diagrams on the bottom show the possible H&L decays. You can either decay via a W or via a Z. And of course, with the W, you can also get hadronic decays. So you get a semi-leptonic final state L nu JJ that I know others in the team have been looking at. So the initial study that was performed developed an event selection to reduce the backgrounds. And this essentially required two electrons and a veto on additional objects, a missing momentum cut at 10 GeV to reduce the Z to EE background. And then the two electrons were required to have a D0, so a transverse impact parameter greater than 0.5 millimeters. And you can see some of the distributions shown here from the initial paper. And I guess one thing we should note is the fact that these backgrounds are already quite lumpy in the tail shows that we were quite limited by statistics for the Spring 21 samples. And there are also some studies in the paper to look at how we could possibly distinguish between Majorana and direct H&Ls. As a reminder of the workflow, so all of this is using the workflow many of us have been talking about for the last few years. So Juliet had very kindly put together an LLP tutorial that uses the full FCC analysis software to start from the central EDM per HEP files and then produce some intermediate flux and cut flow tables. And when I think one thing I should note is when this work was beginning, there was quite a lot of problems with what I'm going to call scalability of the software. And these are now broadly fixed, but it's certainly a lot better if you include a lot of filtering in your stage one because of the way FCC analysis runs over the software. Okay, so I wanted to go through a few of the notes that are available on the FCC Physics and Performance Wiki on the differences between the Spring 21 and the Winter 23 studies, because I think that helps to set the scene a bit for why things probably look different when you try to compare newer results with the old ones. So the main thing about the Spring 21 samples is that there was a problem with overlap removal in the delta step, meaning that the default jets shouldn't be used. And the recommendation was to then recluster the jets. There were also some inefficiencies in electrons due to the overlap removal, and this was also at low PTE mainly. And I think one thing that John found when he was trying to reproduce results earlier this year is our impression also from chatting to Julia and looking on Git is that this jet reclustering actually wasn't done for the snow mass results, which means that we don't necessarily want to trust the relative rejection you get based on jet vetoes for these backgrounds. I'm now going to show a load of things about the new 23 samples, but I've tried to highlight the main points again on the slide. So the main thing is for the newer samples, there's no isolation requirements applied to electrons and muons. And if you dig into the Delphis card for the Spring 21 samples, you'll see that they were applied then. The problems with the electron inefficiencies have been fixed, but no overlap removal is applied by default now in the new sample, so this is left to the user. And finally, the JET clustering has been fixed, but the default JET collection is now different to what was applied previously. So you're told that, again, to be safe, it's best to recluster the JETs in SEC analysis. Okay, so just the next slide has got written what I said on the previous one, so I won't go through it in detail, but just to say that in what I've been looking at, I haven't really reconsidered the isolation requirements, so this could be a point of further optimization. However, we have, so this was something John did earlier this year, was studying that you can basically emulate overlap removal by removing your leptons from the reconstructed particles you include in the JET reconstruction. So that's included in all the results here. We also changed the JET reclustering as well as to have this overlap removal, but to be done using anti-KT. And that was to try and, again, be as close as possible to what we did before. I'm now going to try and go through some of the main results, but actually everything I've presented today is written up minus a proper introduction and conclusion in a very rough draft of a note, and comments and questions are welcome. So this includes a comparison of the published results versus the new results with winter 23 samples in terms of background rejection for cuts in the EE new channel. I decided to that this was, so comparing the kind of background rejection factor and the signal acceptance was probably the safest way to make statements, just because we run out of Monte Carlo statistics relatively quickly. So it's hard to compare exact sensitivity. So this was also something that John was working on earlier this year, was the impact of placing requirements on reconstructed secondary vertices rather than just the electron transverse impact parameter. And I also made an attempt to produce a sensitivity block, which we can discuss later. Full disclaimer, I spent so much time trying to get to a point where I had numbers that I could use to make this plot that I was left with a day before vacation to try and make a Python plot to make a 2D contour. So it's very, very ugly, and I apologize for that. And also there's a little bit on discussion of future work at the end. It looks like the PDFs have not posted onto my slide very well, but I just want to say a little bit about statistics, which basically boils down to the fact that the sample luminosities for the spring 23 samples were really, really low. So assuming that if you want to get reliable estimates, you want your sample luminosity to be of the order of the data set you expect, we're orders of magnitude too small here. And if you look at the relative increase in raw events of winter 23 compared to spring 21, we're increasing statistics by factors of 5 to 10, but that still means we're going to be at relatively low sample luminosities. And I think we need to note this as a caveat when quoting prospects for background researchers, and or come up with other techniques to convince ourselves that in a certain area of parameter space, we really would be background free. And maybe that could be done using Monte Carlo truth information. So the next slide is essentially a reproduced version of the results that were in the table from the snow mass report. And the numbers on the right show the, I guess, effective rejection factor, which is the inverse of the selection efficiency for various background processes and benchmark HNL signals. So you can see, you know, we're reducing most backgrounds by 10 to the power of a relatively big number. And this was seen as, you know, supporting evidence that we could, with sufficient optimization, perform background researches at FCCE. Then the points with an HLL mass of 50 and a coupling with the electron neutrino at 6 × 10⁻⁵ had a yield of around 1. So this was taken to be indicative of the maximum sensitivity. Just to add a couple of points on this, so these benchmark signals are relatively simplistic, so we're only considering one generation of HNL and a single coupling. And of course, the work that's been done by Sophia and other collaborators is trying to consider a more realistic model. Okay, So I'll now go through some of the updated results with the winter 23 samples. The first is a figure that I've taken straight from the notes, which really just looks at different jet reclustering. So the top left is the default jet collection in the winter 23 samples. And I guess the thing to note here is that because of this lack of overlap removal, you get quite a lot of Z to EE events with two reconstructed jets. The second one across has just the reclustered jets with the anti-KT algorithm. And then the one on the bottom is the one where you recluster the jets, but also remove all electrons and muons from the jet recluster, all the reconstructed particles associated with the electrons and muons from the jet reclustering. And as you can see, as soon as you do this, on the bottom left, things look a lot more sensible. So most of our Z to EE events are now in the zero jet bin. So what I then tried to do was reproduce the same cut flow now, but with the winter 23 backgrounds. And I think a thing to note here, which takes a little bit of eyeballing at the numbers, is you get higher rejection of the hadronic backgrounds due to having fixed the jet reclustering, which is nice. And on some level, that means we can argue that the previous results are conservative, which is also good. And another thing I think to note is we also get improved signal acceptance. These were using some signal samples that were generated by John earlier this year that he did validate against the old samples. And I think, and there's some plots in the backup that show this, this is due to the recovery in the electron efficiency at lower PT. So this could have been hitting the sub-bleeding lepton in the HNL signal. I mentioned before that rather than considering the transverse impact parameter we've moved to requiring exactly one displaced vertex. And this essentially, if you look in the column on the right, removes nearly all the backgrounds, except for a few remaining Z to tau tau and Z to BV events. And if you actually look in the notes, you'll see that those numbers are really coming from one or two Monte Carlo events each. So it's hard to study additional variables at this stage. So on the next slide, you can see a couple of distributions at the selection level of event vetoes, so two electrons, no muons or photons. And on the right, there's a distribution where it's actually only vetoing muons and photons, not jets. So the left is the missing energy distribution. And again, the shape looks relatively similar to what we saw in the spring 21 samples. And then the right is the displaced vertex reconstruction. One thing I wanted to highlight here is that if you look at the distribution of the number of displaced vertices, a displaced vertex requirement will essentially remove nearly all of our Z to EE background, which then begs the question about whether the previous cut on the missing momentum is still required or if it should be reoptimized. In order to gain a little bit of statistics, but look at variables where we could potentially get more discrimination, there's a few plots on the next slide that have exactly one displaced vertex, no muons or photons, but we haven't yet applied the jet veto. So the top left is the number of reconstructed jets. On the right, you can see the missing energy distribution. And again, as you can see from the plot here, the signals tend to peak at higher values, but you don't have this low missing momentum tail that we did before. So again, I think that's probably worth reconsidering. And on the bottom, there's the dielectron invariant mass. And then on the right is the delta phi between the two electrons. And I think the reason for showing some of these variables on the bottom is that there are distributions where the signal shape could be used either to further suppress the background or if we're in an optimistic scenario, potentially to characterize the signal. In the note, I tried to have a bit of discussion about the kind of choices of the settings you put in the secondary vertex reconstruction. So on the next slide, you can see events with, again, no muons or photons, but the jet veto isn't applied yet. And the D0 cut for tracks entering the secondary vertex reconstruction has been increased from 0.5 to 2. And again, I guess the main thing, if you were to eyeball the numbers, is there's just a lot fewer events in this plot. So you can get a lot more background rejection if you do this requirement. And on the next slide, you can just see the event selection criteria when you do this set of requirements. So now the cuts are applied incrementally. And you can see that by the time you apply the jet veto on top of the displaced vertex cut, we're basically losing all of our backgrounds. So I think this is nice to see, but of course, we should really try to optimize such selections on larger background samples if we can do so. To wrap this up, I wanted to try and produce a rough sensitivity projection, and I'm afraid I didn't have time to put all of this in today's presentation due to the summer school I'm currently teaching on. But I went through and had a look at the summary plots for HNLs that were shown in the European strategy, and that actually takes contours from a theory paper that assumes 100% signal acceptance argues that you can do a background research in a particular area of parameter space. Now that effort, I think, was considering both the fully leptonic and the semi-leptonic decay channels of the HNL. So this won't have the same level of sensitivity. However, if we were in a position to potentially do some combined results, I think that would be really cool. So what I did here was essentially take a load of HNL samples, and I should say I've generated these in EDM for HEP format, and they're on EOS. So if these are interesting or useful for other members of the team, I'm happy to point you to them. The cross-sections are available and on the table. I've also calculated the expected C times tau, so the expected decay length in centimeters. So we can actually use that to kind of verify for ourselves why certain samples that might have higher cross-section, actually we don't see any sensitivity. And in bold, you can see all the signal points where you get at least one event in the selection that I've applied. And finally, to wrap it up, this was the plot I warned you all about earlier. I tried to make a 2D plot similar to the ones you see in the projections as a function of the heavy neutral lepton mass and the coupling. This is just a single event contour here. There's almost certainly within those that do more coding regularly a better script to do this. So if you have one, I'd be very grateful for it. But I should also say that the granularity of points on the grid that I made isn't very good. So it should be relatively easy to add points to this curve, which would make the extrapolation easier and a bit more reliable. I'll now just say a little bit about the status of Monte Carlo filtered studies. And really, we've discussed this quite a lot before. In order to be able to get adequate statistics, we would need filtered samples. During his project, John made significant progress on this and helped a lot by URI, so thanks a lot for his support. And this was implementing Monte Carlo filtering in key for HEP using Gaudi filtering algorithms. So I spoke to URI recently, who noted that due to updates in the kind of key for HEP setup and backward compatibility problems, it would be very hard for us to consider generating new samples that we would then compare directly to the winter 23 samples. And we've agreed that it might be more efficient going forward to just start making some new samples that are filtered, that we might make some kind of back of the envelope checks that they're making sense. I haven't picked this work up again yet, but now that I've written up the other HNL studies, this is gonna be the next thing I come back to. I think I would like to discuss probably the possibilities for publishing everything that's been done to this point today first and proceed with studies on the filtering in parallel. Okay, so in terms of conclusions and next steps, I tried to document the updated studies on HNL production in the ENU channel that I would like to see published if possible in the coming months. The reason that I wanted to discuss this in the group is I think that a lot of the kind of lessons or messages require acknowledging, some limitations of both our current and previous work. So I wanted to discuss this in the group and be interested if people have thoughts on how to proceed. And in the meantime, thanks a lot for listening, and I'm happy to take questions and comments.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Indeed, it's still on my list to read your note and give you comments. I'm hopefully getting that to that very soon, like today. So, comments, questions. Okay, maybe I can. Ah, Rebecca.
Sorry, it took me forever to find how you raise your hand. So I think that's very nice, Sarah. Thank you so much. I have not really followed up all your progress, and I think it's a super impressive thing that you've been doing. So it's looking really good. It will be interesting to see how we can combine this with everything else that is going on in the heavy neutral leptons now towards the strategy to have a nice input with it. But I had one question about, because I cannot see the table of that you present in slide 20. It's a bit blurry for me.
Yeah, I think it's probably better to just look in the notes.
So, in the note, yeah.
Okay. All of these, and there's a bit more discussion in it too. So, yeah, I think it's probably better to go to those. But if you want me to summarize any of it, I can.
Oh, that's all right. I think it's nice, and it's a kind of table that is actually really nice to see. So if it's in the note, don't worry, I will check it out in there. So that is not a problem. One question I have is, like, are you assuming, I mean, I guess you are, but just in case, that we have four interaction points and so on and so forth?
No. So not yet.
okay.
So I would say that, so I wanted to get a self-consistent set of results mm-hmm. that demonstrated the workflow. Now that I've done that, depending on how we agree to move forward, it would be very easy to update everything to the latest yeah. integration numbers. I just didn't want to, basically halfway through, I realized I should probably change for the newer results to the full luminosity, but I was too scared to change it.
Well, but that's all right, it's still quite okay. I mean, and when you say that it will be nice to have a script for doing this kind of figures, I do think we should all use the same script actually in all the analysis in VSM. So if somebody is good at this, it will be good to have some sort of somebody volunteering to prepare this kind of script, because it will be nice to have like a cohesive way of presenting these kind of things. And of course, we will want to present them all together, right? So
yeah,
I agree with your point.
I was having a look through the theory contours, and I think it would be mm-hmm. really nice if we could have a repository where basically we have all the graphs for the previous contours that have been used for these summary plots. And we just have a mechanism to overlay a new number, a new set of numbers.
You are familiar with this this website that has the, like, made by a theorist. I mean, we used it a lot of times. Let me see if I can find it. Hmm. Yes, I think it was Mark that did it. You know what? Because that includes all the theory for heavy neutral leptons that we know.
I think that's the one by Depesh et al, I think.
Yes. There you go. So do you have the link? Yeah,
from
one hand.
I can look for it.
Yeah, I also can look for it. Okay, so because we look for it when other people.
I have everything in my directory.
Yeah, I have it in. I have so many tabs. It's just an embarrassing number. So maybe we can have that as a starting point. We will try to find it and share it. Whoever is faster, okay. Please put it in the chat. So yeah, so thanks so much, Sarah, for this. It's very nice. So from my side, I'm good. You can go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, maybe about that. So I know, for example, for snowmass, all we did was S over square root of S plus B for, like, you know, the z-axis of this sensitivity plot. Whereas, for example, Sophia and Matteo and their whole group, they're using combine. So these are very different measures of sensitivity. So we should, if we put them on the same plot, we should harmonize this a little bit.
Yeah, so I think that's the other thing, because actually for these ones where we're saying let's assume a background free, which mm-hmm. I think we should probably do, but with big caveats of we've still got a lot to understand to make sure that they really are. I think it seems that you just give a one and a four event contour.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Different sigmas.
One. My other question or comment on sort of the results is, Okay, for me, the snowmass result is done and somewhat buried because I mean, I think sort of everyone, including you, definitely have shown that we can and should move quite past it. So I think we can just sort of pretend it never happened in the sense of when we put out a new result. I mean, we can cite it, fine, but then say we have redone it. This, you know, we can even mention things that are better, but not really. But as we do with any other analysis in Atlas CMS or whatever, where we put out a new result, we don't go crazy about the diff, you know?
Yeah, so I should say I'm very happy with that. I'm very happy where we write a relatively short paper that basically says using updated background samples and the latest version of our software, we've because really what I guess what we're doing is extending the selection. So I'm happy with that, provided everyone else is. But I think the reason I've written everything up in the internal document is that at least for the time being, I found that when students, often when students start on something, the first thing you do is to try and reproduce something. So I think it is good for ourselves to be on the same page about what was and wasn't done at different points. So yeah, basically I agree with you. So what, to be very clear, the draft that you have got the link to is my version of what I think the FCC internal note is. And if we're happy to move forward, I'm very happy to write a short paper, which is basically the kind of headlines of that. And it would be probably about 3 or 4 pages, and maybe have a bit more comparisons.
Okay, that's fine with me. Rebecca Giacomo, what do you think?
Wait, that was muted. I was talking to me. It sounds fine. I mean, I have nothing
Sounds
to add.
fine. But
I found the plot,
you
the
mean,
link. Sorry,
Thank you.
Jacob.
Yeah, no, thank you. I've seen the link. Thank you. Now, I was wondering, do you mean that you wanted to make a real paper out of this material? Seems to be more too technical and not physical enough, in my opinion, but for an actual paper.
So again, this is what I would like all of your input on. So I think I would like this work to be published. My original view was that if there were groups of people that have worked on either HNLs or not, or other things, I would be very happy to see a kind of combined paper, because as you say, some of this stuff is quite technical and the final result is really going to be one plot, which says we're confident that we now can do displaced vertex reconstruction. Here's roughly what the signal acceptance looks like across a wide area parameter space. If we think we would have it zero backgrounds in this channel, then this is what the sensitivity would look like. So it would be short. I think it would, I don't know, as with all of these things, it's much nicer when you publish lots of things together and you can see the bigger picture, but I don't know what other people's plans are, so I don't want to make assumptions.
I think both things will work, right? I mean, I think maybe this will still be fine for a paper. I mean, we don't know. It depends also who where it falls and of course what is the journal that you send it. But if you send it to some kind of moderate journal and you have a nice figure at the end, I think that it's not necessarily something that will be declined upfront. However, this is work that should be somewhere. So I mean, one can go the way of trying to publish this on its own and see what happens. We can also go the way of trying to publish this, like even as conference proceeding, or doing something in common with other people. But there's something to decide from everybody that is doing heavy neutral leptons, right? I mean, if it's something that we want to do, like a common paper, or if it's something that we want to just do a new version of lonely particles, let's say a white paper thing, I think it's a little bit on us. So I would try anyway if the analysis is finalized and you're using all the latest and greatest materials from the FCC analysis. I would try it because I think it's a complete analysis from beginning to end, including sensitivity. You know, I mean, of course, it's not the same as it will be something that's never been done before. It's just an update of something else. But to me, I still find that it could be worth checking it out.
Yeah, so to me, the problem is with my normal Atlas hat on, it feels like work that is could be argued as kind of incremental on what has been done before. So for that reason, you know, my preference would always be, would probably be for it to be part of a bigger effort. But if there are no bigger efforts ongoing, then I guess I would still like to see something come out of it. If nothing else, so that, you know, the students have something to show for their work. But again, this is why, to me, I'm still a little bit unclear about the interplay between, you know, these internal FCC notes, how they go into the feasibility study, and then also how people are credited for the stuff that goes in, you know, how the choices are made about what isn't gone in. I think there are some questions on that that maybe, I don't know, maybe you lot do know or you don't know yet.
Yeah, for me, it's a bit unclear. Okay, I think we need a separate conversation to do this sort of physics planning, if you will, on the HNL side. I think we should have a dedicated meeting for it and include the physics and performance conveners.
Yeah, I think that would be good. So yeah, I won't take any more of Julia's time now.
Okay, thanks. I can get an email going to start that. And in the meantime, Julia.
Yeah, let me share. All right, you see them in full screen? Perfect. Yeah. All right, so when I... Oh, it's moving. Yeah, so when I asked for this the slot in this meeting, I thought that I would be presenting what we thought were unphysical or weird track IP distributions in the winter 2023 samples. And I think I rang the alarm bell for you, Juliet, and also with Sarah. Since then, we have done a bit or some studies to try to understand the track impact parameter distributions in the sample. And we are now convinced that they are not weird. They are physical, but still, gives us some more work to do in our exotic Higgs decays to long-lived scalars studies. So I thought that it would still be useful to use this slot and show you what we have found. Maybe someone else would run into this in a while otherwise. So we have a reference for this. So I included a usual recap for the analysis that we're doing. It's not really the topic of this talk, but just to, you know, remind everyone about the background. So we are studying the FCCE sensitivity towards long-lived scalars that come from exotic Higgs decays. So this is, of course, the SEDH stage, and we are looking at the signal process where the Z goes to an electron-muon pair, and then the Higgs goes to two dark scalars, and each of the scalars goes to a BB bar pair. So the signature we have is one or maybe two, we don't know yet, but okay, displaced vertices from these long-lived scalar decays, and then the RICO Z boson from the lepton pair. So Magda did for her master's thesis, very detailed the generator level studies, and she's showed that we have, assuming a background free search, we have sensitivity to a few of the signal points that she generated. And then Axel has sort of taken over this work, and he's now working on a refined background study using the winter 2023 campaign samples. So that's the background. And here is the plot that caused us to ring the alarm bell and think that, okay, there's something wrong with these samples. So what the plot that you're looking at is the distance between the primary vertex and the DVs, and you see the different backgrounds here stacked. So it's WW background, ZZ background, and the ZH background. So I don't want to, I mean, this looks, of course, very discouraging if you want the background-free search where you want to cut, you know, on the distance between the PVs and DVs to remove the background. We shouldn't spend too much time on this plot. I just included it to tell you a bit of the reason why we started these studies. So we have been investigating where these DVs come from, these large radius DVs. And that's why I will show you the impact parameter distributions. There are details that we have shown before also in these meetings on the DV reconstruction in backup. All right, so the first thing was, of course, then to look at the impact parameter distributions. So I'm going to show both D0 and Z0. Here on this slide, you have the D0 distribution. So it's D0, D0 variance, and then the D0 significance. And it's three samples. So the black one is a background sample. Here it's the ZH sample where the Z goes to two electrons and the Higgs goes to two Z bosons. And then you have two different signal samples. The red one is one with some significant displacement, and the green one has a larger coupling and a larger scalar mass. So that's in principle a prompt signal sample. And here there are no selections applied. So it's including all the tracks from the eFlow track one collection in the EDM4HAP format. So what caused us to jump here, I think particularly with our Atlas glasses on, is that we see, I mean, we are not used to see the zero values up to more than 1 meter, as you see in the black, in the background distribution here, and also in the prompt signal sample. But at least that explains why we reconstruct a significant fraction of DVs at large radius. Then we're wondering what these large D0 tracks are, and we also compare this to plots, Juliet, that you had made when you validated these pre-winter 2023 samples, where you didn't see tracks all the way up to here. I'm also including here the same samples. Here you look at Z0, and yeah, here we also see tracks up to what we think are very large Z0 values. So I'm going quite fast, but you can just stop me if you have questions. Okay, so then we went to check things instead at truth level. So here, instead of looking at tracks, I'm looking at all the charged Monte Carlo particles in the EDM4HAP files. So the left plot here is the production radius of the charged Monte Carlo particles in the sample. And to the right is the position in Z. Of the production point. So you see that there is the scale here on the y-axis, and the drop is pretty similar to the drop in the D0 distribution. So the thought here is that these large D0 tracks probably come from these Monte Carlo particles that are produced at large radius. We did a small or basic truth matching study to find out if we could find for each large D0 track a matching Monte Carlo particle. And we could, so I will show you some examples now. So what you see here is sort of the Monte Carlo ancestry tracked back from the particle that's matched to a track. So here it's a track with a D0 of about 1 meter. Then the first line here is the Monte Carlo particle that's truth matched to this track. So we know that there is a link between this Monte Carlo particle and this track. And then we trace backwards in the ancestry. So the next line corresponds to the parent particle of this, the electron that gives the track, and so on. So you can see here how this, if we start from the bottom, this starts with the electron at a momentum of 120 GeV. So that's this is the ZH stage, so it's 240 center of mass. And then you have the Higgs here. The Higgs goes to a B quark, and then there's a fragmentation process from this B quark that in the end gives you a K short. And in this example, this K short travels 1.3 meters before decaying into a pion, and then this gives you the electron that gives you the track. So this is quite a long-lived k-short, but at least there's nothing unphysical in this example. We understand where this large D0 track comes from. And then here's another example where in this case it's this is the same. So this track comes from, I don't remember what this is, but okay, it comes from the decay of two strange baryons, one lambda and one xi baryon, and they each fly about 0.5 meters before decaying. And same here, they correspond to the fragmentation of the B quark in this sample. So here in these two examples, I was looking at a sample where the Higgs goes to BB bar. But then you can also, here is an example where the Higgs goes to Z bosons instead. And here in this example, you have electron to Higgs, Higgs to Z boson, and then the Z boson goes to an S quark. And there you get the fragmentation resulting in a K short. And this is what flies a long distance and then gives you a large D0 track. All right. So I think this is, that's all the results that I wanted to show, or all our findings. I can summarize and then you can ask questions. What we first thought were unphysical distributions of the impact parameters seem perfectly physical. We can truth match all the large D0 tracks to charged particles that come from the fragmentation of quarks. And then comparing this to what we know from ATLAS, I guess it's the many layers of the idea tracker and how this is implemented in Delphus that, it makes it reasonable that these large radius decays are reconstructed as tracks. And if we then we went back and checked your slides, Juliet, and what you did, and there you made these D0 and Z0 plots selecting only electron tracks, or maybe you did muon tracks too. But that's of course a very specific subset of the tracks that we are looking at here. So there, it's not strange that the distributions look very similar to what we know from ATLAS and CMS. So for our analysis, this means that it will take more than a D0 requirement to make this a background-free search. So that, of course, gives us some more work to do. So we have started to think about this a little bit and tried out some things. Our immediate idea was that these large radius background decays are, of course, always, they come from prompt jets. There's still nothing displaced in these background samples. So a nice thing would be, of course, to add an event level selection on jets, for example, the number of prompt jets, so the jet PT and so on. And that we started looking into, and then we ran into exactly the issue that Sarah talked about today with the jets in these samples not being reliable. We have also tried to add a requirement on the number of tracks in the DV. We had before, we included also two track DVs. We tried to remove them. That gives an improvement, but it doesn't remove this tail completely. We're also going to try to increase the PT threshold of the tracks that are allowed to be included in the vertexing. It's currently at 1 GV, but this could be increased. And we have, of course, from before a D0 requirement, but we will also try to add a D0 significance requirement. We saw some discrimination power there in the plots that I showed today. But then, of course, the main reason for showing this today is to ask you all if you have any other ideas for us, and or if this makes sense to you. All right, so that was it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Julia. Yeah, interesting, definitely. Perhaps I can start with maybe just a simple question. Why didn't you see this before in previous versions of the samples? Or, and perhaps relatedly, wouldn't this show up in, say, an Atlas search with jets? I mean, you're saying, I mean, wouldn't this happen sort of all the time? And how do we deal with it in other scenarios?
Yeah, exactly. We don't, I think the idea tracker is amazing with all the layers. So I think, I mean, that's very different from the tracking systems in Atlas and CMS. And then I started digging into a little bit what Delphus actually does and what tracks are, what charged particles come out as tracks. But I haven't managed to figure out yet exactly if there's a PT threshold or, you know, those details. But I'm assuming that it's a combination of the idea tracker being, you know, much, much better than what we have in Atlas and CMS and Delphus.
Okay, I see.
I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think the studies that Magda did some background studies, but she had very low statistics. And it was only the WW and the ZZ samples. So could be that. I'm not actually sure.
Okay. And wait, so you're only seeing this now with these samples? And you didn't see it with spring 2021? Did we not look properly? Did we not do the jet clustering properly then? You know, what's different in your analysis, Diff?
Yeah, the study that Magda did was really statistics limited. And actually, Magda, I don't recall now anymore if you even did you do a plot of the PVDV distance in background, or was it only looking at numbers? I think Magda is connected, right?
Yeah, hi, I'm here. No, exactly. I never looked at any plots. I only looked at the kind of event selection. And then at that point, the final selection of requiring at least 2 dBs got the background to zero.
Yeah.
But I never plotted it, so.
That still works now. I mean, we killed the background also with asking 2 dBs, but it would be nice to understand what is going on in here then.
Okay,
you were saying something, Julia.
No.
Sorry.
I was going to say the same thing.
Okay. So then I think we've convinced ourselves that what you're seeing is real, and now we have to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah. And as Rebecca say, we could kill this with, you know, the 2 dB requirement. But that also means that we can never show a plot of the PVDV distance with background and signal, which of course would be a nice plot to include in, you know, in the publication of this.
Sorry.
Or we could, but it doesn't look good.
No.
I mean, it will require the explanation of like, okay, this bump is based on this kind of decays. But also, I mean, one thing that is obvious is that when we have our signal and when the backgrounds exist, we have different kind of jet composition. So our secondary vertices are coming out alone, whereas the secondary vertices that we are seeing in that bump, they are coming inside another jet. So that is another, as Julia presented already, another way of going as well.
Yeah, they are inside a prompt jet. I mean, our displaced vertices are also in jets, but they are not prompt jets.
No. So I think
I feel like that's the best way to try to tackle this, because that's the physical thing that's different, no?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think we agree on this point. It actually makes sense. I mean, it's not something that happens super often that we have enough of these secondary vertices to be really a big problem, but it's something that will be much more elegant to not have. So if we will have from the beginning an event level selection saying like, okay, we're having prompt jets kill this event and we don't even look at it, we will not be sensitive to the cases in which our signal is a little bit prompt, but that's fine. I mean, this is something that we can investigate in different ways and it should get rid of this. However, the jets, as you know, we are a little bit more annoying. Then we have to do the jet reclustering and so on. Maybe it's not a lot of effort to add it up. So, and I think it probably will be worth it to have it for this analysis, right? I mean, I think we're getting more and more unconvinced about this through the days. So it probably is worth it to have that.
Yeah, I got more optimistic about that when I saw Sarah's slide before this.
Yeah, that was nice.
Because I mean, the first thing I plotted from the number of jets in the EDM for HEP just looked weird.
Right. Yeah, I think we should sync this across analyses if we can.
Yeah.
Other thoughts, questions, or suggestions? Okay. I don't see any. Does that help as a response, Julia?
Yeah, it helps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I mean,
thanks for the input.
I hope you weren't discouraged by this, because I feel like this is the work that needs to happen to figure out what Delphius is actually doing for mm-hmm. us, and see if it's right or it's wrong, and try to understand it.
We were maybe a little bit discouraged, but I mean, I prefer it to be this kind of issue and not, you know, we have to wait
for all the
new campaign of
yeah.
Indeed, there's different levels.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I'll stop sharing.
Thank you. So let's see. I believe next Thursday is Jeune Genevois, so we shouldn't have a meeting then. But the following Thursdays are possible. So if you have anything to present, send me an email. And we will be talking also to the physics and performance conveners, and seeing on the BSM side how we are, if we will go ahead with dedicated BSM meetings, and how we will organize that as well. But I think our idea, you know, Rebecca, Giacomo, and me, we would like to stick to this slot, because it has been working so far. Sarah.
Hi, and just to check, based on the fact we're not having a meeting for a couple of weeks, will we iterate offline about the kind of various timescales and plans? Because since one of the deadlines is in about 3 days, it would be good to know.
Yeah, indeed. I'm going to send an email after this meeting to people to organize a dedicated meeting to understand what the plan should be for H&Ls. I think we need a meeting dedicated mm-hmm. for that in the coming, you know, week or two.
Yeah. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thanks, everyone. See you.
Thank you so much.
Earliest 2 weeks from now. Let me know.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.